For hundreds of years, we've studied biology. We never engineered it. Well, that's about to change. And I kind of like the idea because, you know, we talk a lot about nanobots. The best nanobots might be bacteria, re-engineered. They have big advantages. For one thing, they die. They'll go away.
Brings us back to that question at the end. Was Ada Lovelace right that machines could do quite a lot, but they would never surpass human abilities? The future looks unclear to me. I don't know if I would be prepared to say that she was absolutely right in that prognostication.
Listen, if Ada were alive today, I would make her a bet that she's actually wrong.
Thanks to a production team that keeps us connected, Gary Niederhoff and Barbara Vance.
Also, thanks to financial support from Rena Shulsky David and Sammy David and the NASA Astrobiology Institute. Big Picture Science is produced at the SETI Institute, whose mission is to understand and explore the nature of life. And a big thanks also to our listeners.
Your ears have been attuned to living computers. If you'd like to hear more Big Picture Science, you can peruse our archive online at our website, BigPictureScience.org.
And if you're a podcast listener, but you prefer to substitute that for over-the-air radio because your AI in residence insists, check out the listing on our website of radio stations that carry the program. And if your local station is not on that list, well, consider letting them know you like the show. Oh, have a comment, a criticism, even a suggestion, throw in some praise, and email it all to BigPictureScience@SETI.org.
Huh? Oh, what was that?
Yep, you do.
This is Allison Brown, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn, broadcasting the best in acoustic music since 1985.
This is the city where danger lurks. Today, a new creature walks among us, causing fear, mayhem, and injury.
Stay back, children.
Mommy, I'm scared.
Look out for the dreaded digital deadwalkers. They're not looking out for you. With faces pressed against their little handheld devices, they put all good citizens in harm's way.
Hey, pal. Pardon you.
The digital deadwalkers are multiplying. Until their behavior patterns can be modified, the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons warns all innocent people to stay alert. Better yet, to step up and speak out.
Hey, dude. I'm walking here.
Sorry. I didn't see you.
A public service message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, who want to keep everyone well connected with healthy bones.
Criminal justice studies are concerned with the preservation of peace, the prevention of crime, and the protection of life and property. A knowledge of the role of criminal justice in our society also serves to emphasize the importance of balancing the needs of society to maintain social order against the need to safeguard individual rights. For more information on the HFC Associate Degree Program in Criminal Justice, contact the Criminal Justice Department at one of the following numbers: 313-845-6437, 313-845-9714, or 313-845-9859.
Guys and dolls out there, you're invited to join me, Daddy G, at the Malt Shop every Tuesday from 2 to 4 p.m. We'll go back to the 50s and 60s, when rock and roll was just getting started. So hang those fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror and cruise on down to the Malt Shop, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Only here on WHFR. Be there or be square.
Have you ever considered working in public radio? Be a DJ, have your own radio show, and play the genre that interests you most. Or host a local talk show. Qualified volunteers can get started right here at WHFR 89.3 at Henry Ford College and help us with all aspects of station operation. Sign up for the class, WHFR Staff Training, and learn the basics of the business from HFC telecommunication professionals. For more information about WHFR, check out our website, whfr.fm, and join us in making waves. To get the details about the next staff training class, either TCM 189, or 1 hour of academic credit, or the non-credit version, call WHFR General Manager Susan McGraw at 313-845-9842. That's Susan McGraw at 313-845-9842.
Hi, this is Pat Frisco with a message that Spirits Rejoice enters its 21st year on the air. Continuing the sounds of creative improvised music every Tuesday from 6 until 10 p.m. on this radio station, WHFR Dearborn.
Oh, good afternoon and welcome to Impact, the show about individuals and groups making a positive difference in the community. This is a live show today, and I need to remind you that the views and opinions expressed on Impact are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio nor Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn. I'm your host, Lynn, and today we're discussing the Victory Gym with founder Mike Emery, and we have veteran Mark Sheeler in the studio with us. We're going to get started with something that, I'll tell you what, maybe we're going to get started with a little conversation, make a couple adjustments here. Okay. I'm not sure what that buzz is all about.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. We have all kinds of equipment fun going on in WHFR studios, huh?
There we go. All right. Let's see how... Say something, Mark.
Something, Mark.
Okay, this is Mark Sheeler, and you may know him better if you are a listener of WHFR as Murdoch.
You may know me as the Madman Murdoch, host of Pedal to the Metal, formerly of Tuesdays, 4 to 6 p.m. on WHFR, the only station making waves.
There you go. All right. And we are waiting for Mike Emery to come in, but in the interim, tell us about you. Tell us about you as a vet, not you as Murdoch, Madman Murdoch, Mr. Metal, all that good stuff. But tell us about you and some of the experiences that basically none of us can even imagine.
Well, as a veteran, I did many, many things, many facets, many jobs and positions in the Army. I was in the Army for 7 years, 2 months, 22 days, according to my DD-214. And if anybody has ever served, they have a DD-214, and they know exactly how long they serve because it says right there how many years, months, and days you serve. While I was in, I made it to the rank of Staff Sergeant, which is the sixth enlisted rank that you can get to. I was doing pretty well as far as career advancement and positions that I had held. I was a squad leader, a platoon sergeant. I served in Iraq, South Korea, Fort Sill, Oklahoma, Fort Lewis, Washington. I was an AIT instructor, which AIT is the basically job training for new soldiers after basic training. Once they graduate from basic training, they go to advanced individual training, and that's where my job came in. I taught them how to do my job. Well, to their level anyways.
Okay.
Towards the lower level of the career field. And in artillery, that basically just means that for 6 weeks they listen to me balk on about shooting cannons, and it was pretty fun. But I got to shoot a lot of artillery shells when I was an AIT instructor, and I loved it. I still have AIT soldiers that I taught that live in Michigan. They're in the Michigan National Guard, and they call me on a constant basis. Hey, Chief, what are you doing? Let's go hang out. Let's go have a beer. You know, they are so influenced by what I taught them that they continue to stay in contact with me, and we continue to keep in touch, and I love it. The fact that they still call me Chief is even better, because that's what you call an artillery squad leader is a section chief.
Right.
So you call them Chief, and they still call me Chief, and that really makes me feel good that I did something that impacted them, and taught them not only, you know, job skills in the Army, but also life skills. Mm-hmm. And some of them have even said that I influenced them in the way that they raise their children, which is kind of weird to me. It's kind of weird to me. I don't understand it, but that's what they've told me.
Well, maybe the discipline of sorts, or
it might be. It might be along that lines. I really hope that they don't do it in the way I did, because I was an angry individual. I've been dealing with anger issues for years. I think that is something that's sort of bred into soldiers in basic training, though, is that just pure anger mm-hmm. that you have to be able to turn on and turn off. And I just never quite was able to flip the switch down. It was always just up. And so from there, you know, I loved what I did in the military. I really did. I wish I could have stayed. I was medically retired. I hurt my back training to go to Afghanistan. And when I hurt my back, I went to what we call sit call, which is, you know, go to medical. And they had me, you know, remove my shirt, and they tried to have me touch my toes, which, you know, I'm not gonna lie about it. Never been able to do that.
Okay.
But it was part of what they do. And they noticed that I had scoliosis, and that's what they medically retired me for.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Yep. So they're like, well, bye. We're doing a drawdown. We're reducing the force, so it's time for you to go. We're going to retire you.
But isn't there a good possibility you had that maybe like from birth?
It's possible, but they didn't find it when I was enlisting.
Yeah.
Or if they did, they didn't document it because I joined during the surge, as they call it.
Oh, okay.
They were trying to build the force up because they were getting ready to turn the government of Iraq back over to the Iraqis.
Mm-hmm.
They needed bodies.
Sure.
So they were just sending anybody through, people with felonies, people that hadn't graduated high school. They were able to enlist, which was something that nobody that was on active duty had ever seen before, because they just didn't do that. In the 90s, you had to have a high school diploma. There was no GED that let you get in. You couldn't have a criminal record. And it was, they really reduced the standards for enlistment when it came time to start putting people in the desert.
Wow. Yeah. What drew you to, since we don't have the draft, what drew you to volunteer to go into the Army?
I didn't like the path my life was going. Okay. I was living in an apartment, and there was, on any given night, at least 10 people sleeping in my two-bedroom apartment, three of which paid rent. I didn't like how it was going. I had a good job.
Mm-hmm.
I was 18, 19 years old working at a factory. So that's good money for a 19-year-old.
It's good money.
Yeah. I was only making, you know, $13, $14 an hour. But at 19 years old, I was pretty well set. Plus, mm-hmm. I had a vehicle I paid $150 for. So I didn't have a car payment.
Okay.
All I did was pay rent and utilities and mm-hmm. party a lot. And that's kind of what drew people to staying at my apartment nonstop and mm-hmm. became more of a flop house than anything else. And it drove me to the point where I was like, well, I'm probably going to end up either in jail or in a grave. So I need to make some sort of a change. And the only change I could think of that didn't involve going to college was joining the military, which in turn led me to go to college.
Okay.
So,
which I think congratulations are in order
you
graduated.
I did just graduate
Saturday.
This past Saturday
yeah.
With my associate's degree from the wonderful Henry Ford College. Graduated with honors, so I'm pretty proud of that. My family seems like they're pretty proud of that. And
I think there's a reason for that.
I suppose.
Well, congratulations on that.
Well, thank you.
The whole turnaround.
Yeah. So. I definitely went from being a cretin to being a what I would consider an upstanding citizen.
Okay. All right. So you're out of the Army. You have your degree or a degree. Are you planning to continue your education at this point? Or?
Yes, I will be going on to University of Michigan, Dearborn, to pursue my bachelor's degree in supply chain management.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty wide open field, very very marketable,
okay.
Very employable.
Mm-hmm.
And the program I'm going through the Veterans Administration is what's known as VOC Rehab or Vocational Rehabilitation.
Mm-hmm.
And basically it's the military going, we broke you, we're sorry. We didn't mean to hurt you. We need to teach you a new job skill because nobody's going to hire someone who can shoot cannons in the civilian world. I mean, I could go to Colorado and be an avalanche mitigation specialist, but I don't want to go to Colorado. Okay. I just don't.
Okay. So explain this course of management, course of study that you're pursuing at this point.
What's that?
Explain the course of study that you're pursuing at U of M.
Supply chain management. Basically, I would be the guy at a company that does some sort of manufacturing, mm-hmm. who is responsible for not telling the trucks where to go, but getting raw materials from their initial point, mm-hmm. to the factory in time for them to go into production.
Okay.
Because, like, if you look at the big three, most of those organizations use what's known as JIT, or just in time.
Yes.
They don't like to pay for warehousing because it costs them a ridiculous amount of money.
Right.
So they do just in time transportation, and the car manufacturers, especially the big three, all right, I'm making a red car, a blue car, a green car, all in one order, and then all in that order. And I want a red door, a blue door, and a green door in that order to arrive at my factory 5 minutes before they go on, mm-hmm. the car. Mm-hmm. So that's what supply chain managers are responsible for. And they're on call 24/7 because they have to be in order to do their job properly. But they get paid well. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. They get paid well.
And so that's applicable to virtually any manufacturing entity.
Any manufacturing that creates products from raw materials. Mm-hmm. Usually not so much the companies that do like secondary processing, but anybody who takes raw materials and turns it into a product, even if it is the initial step, mm-hmm. Like the big three, they use all parts from third party manufacturers. They use plastic components that are made through injection molding.
Right.
So the company that makes those parts with the injection molding, they would have a supply chain manager responsible for getting the raw polypropylene or whatever type of plastic it is that they're using from that manufacturer to the plant, mm-hmm. in order to make their parts so that they can get into contact with another supply chain manager to get those finished parts. Right. To the car manufacturers.
Well, some of that, just to digress a little bit, some of that whole stockpiling mentality is what got the big three into trouble.
Yeah, I was just wanting to maintain a warehouse of their materials. I mean, Ford for decades, they created their entire vehicle from start to finish. Mm-hmm. Here in Dearborn, we have the former Roush facility, which over there was a tire plant, a glass plant. They made everything from scratch, including the steel itself. Mm-hmm. Went from beginning to end. Every single component of the vehicle was made here in Dearborn and then put together. And they just don't do that anymore. Right. Nobody does that anymore.
Right. It's not efficient, and it's incredibly expensive to do that with the warehousing and when there's outsourcing that you can do. With regards to coming out of the military, how did you feel? Your life was, let's just call it a mess before you went in. And when you came out, you had probably a whole new sense of order to your own being.
Yeah, I did.
And then you're coming back into kind of a disorderly world, as opposed to some of the people you were training in the military. How did you adapt to that change, that difference?
I didn't adapt well at all. I had a very horrible transitioning phase. I went through a lot of the typical, what I consider typical of most soldiers when they transition out. Mm-hmm. I didn't adjust well. I became a mortgage banker for some ungodly reason. I thought that was a good idea, and it didn't turn out well for me.
Okay.
I ended up having several jobs in the first 2 years I was out of the military.
Mm-hmm.
My first job right out of the military, within weeks, was a mortgage banker at a company downtown. And I thought it was going to be a great spot for me. I was going to make all kinds of money. And I felt like a crook because I was doing reverse mortgages. And I just didn't like what I was doing, so mm-hmm. I went out and found something else, and I ended up getting a job at a steel plant, which the listeners will probably know the name, Worthington Industries, down in Taylor. Been around for years. They've been a pretty big name in the steel industry, especially for secondary processing and stuff. I got a job there, loved it. Mm-hmm. Loved what I did. I came home tired, dirty, sore, and smelly every single day. But I knew when I walked in the door, as sore as I was, as tired as I was, every penny I put in my pocket that day, I worked hard for.
Sure.
It's hard for me to sit behind a desk. It really is. It's not my style. I've mm-hmm. always worked with my hands, especially being artillery in the military.
That's pretty physical.
Well, yeah, I mean, the rounds themselves that we shot when we were in the field shooting rounds, mm-hmm. each round weighs 100 pounds. Ooh. At the time, I was 132 pounds of a person.
Okay.
So I weighed 30 pounds more than the quote-unquote bullet that I was shooting. So, I mean, I was, you know, I'd go to work and every single day in the Army, and I'd have my hands in grease every day. And I loved it. I loved it. And when I came out, I struggled to find something that suited me, and I started working at Worthington. And then I got ill, and when I got ill, I ended up leaving my position at Worthington on good terms. But you know, that's something I had to leave behind, unfortunately. But now I'm going into a career field that I believe will transition well with my military experience. Mm-hmm. And you know, suit me in a fashion that I'll be able to provide, you know, some sort of quality experience too.
Sure. Well, I can see the computer involved, I can see the desk involved, but I can also see that something's going to go sideways at some point, and you're going to be out the door running to fix whatever goes wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. How about as a person, as a human?
I'm dealing with stuff. Okay. Dealing with a lot of stuff. I've become an advocate for the 22, as I call them, and the 22 are a reference to the 22 veterans a day who commit suicide. I am constantly on the lookout for my military friends on Facebook who are posting cryptic messages. I've threatened to fly to Idaho in the middle of the night because one of my soldiers posted something that I just couldn't stand. He was, you know, talking about being sad, this, that, and the other. Nobody really wants to be around me anyways, type stuff. So I started looking for plane tickets, and my wife was more than willing to allow me to go take care of one of my soldiers.
Sure.
Now, mind you, he was never directly one of my soldiers under my command, but he was somebody I knew and I was stationed with. He was in my unit, and I'll do anything to keep a soldier from becoming a statistic.
All right. Well, right or wrong, good or bad, the people you were with, I mean, basically that's one family.
Right. I hated a large majority of the people I served with.
Okay.
Just because we didn't get along.
It's pretty strong.
But that's how we are. We're either black or white in the spectrum. Nobody's in that gray area. There is no gray. It's I either like you a lot or I want to kill you. It's one of the two. And it's just because there's personalities that don't mesh, and mm-hmm. it's just how it is and how it's always been. And I mean, there are some guys though that I would do anything for, even to this day. If I heard that they had some sort of major accident, you know, I'd go down and find their hospital bed and, you know, sit there with them till they woke up.
Sure.
You know, that's just how it was. Some of those guys, they are my family. There's a saying that says, you know, anyone who shed their blood with me will forever be my brother. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's some of those guys where I truly believe in that.
Right. How did it work out with this person?
He was fine. He posted the message in haste. He was just having a rough time with something.
Okay.
Posted the message in haste, and you know, I was able to talk to him, and he's like, "Yeah, I'm okay. You don't need to come out here. I'm okay. I don't need you know, anybody to come sit with me. I'm gonna be all right." And I went through the steps that I learned through training in the Army, mm-hmm. of, you know, verifying that. You know, I made sure that I talked to his girlfriend at the time, made sure that there were no weapons in the house, because that's often what it is that a veteran will have a bad night with a spouse or a loved one, and they'll take to drinking because that's easier than going to the psychiatrist and going, Doc, I have a problem. And Doc looks and goes, are you going to hurt yourself? Are you going to hurt somebody else? Because that's what they do when you go to the VA. That's the first thing they do is some big bad individual with 8 years of college will start asking you all these questions, and they seem very disingenuous. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's when they take to drinking, doing drugs, and they self-medicate in order to make the pain go away.
Sure.
And they end up getting to a point where they want to put a permanent solution to a temporary problem. And that's when, you know, they become a statistic.
Right.
You know, since 1999, there's been, I think, 200-something thousand veterans that have committed suicide. Now, that's 200,000 deaths not related to combat. That, in my opinion, is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Granted, a soldier dying in combat is terrible. Mm-hmm. It sucks. It's terrible. However, I would much rather see a picture with a yellow ribbon on it than a teal ribbon. Mm-hmm. Because the teal ribbon is for those that have been lost due to PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. Mm-hmm. So.
I realize you're not a doctor.
I am not.
But talk to PTSD. I think a lot of people, well, first of all, there are people out there who think it's not real.
Uh-huh.
I know somebody who was actually in a war zone and thinks that it's, you know, just suck it up.
Yeah, that's a mentality that most soldiers have, especially grunts. Or what we call grunts, infantry, artillery, cavalry, cav scouts, those type of guys, they, you know, we all have this mentality. We're big tough guys.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Take a knee, draw fire, drive on.
Yep.
And that's what it is. And we just have this mentality where we're trying to be so tough, so masculine that we let it get past us.
Yes.
And we end up slipping into these, you know, holes of depression, and we don't realize it because we don't want to admit it.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to admit we have a problem, so we're not going to tell anybody we have a problem, and then it gets even worse and it grows
of
and
course.
It gets even more exacerbated.
Yeah, of course. So tell us a little bit about your experiences. I have a just to try to put this into perspective, that PTSD is real for pretty much everybody.
Yeah, there's a large majority. I mean, you don't have to go to a war zone to develop post-traumatic stress. I would say almost every survivor from the 9/11 attacks, if they were at ground zero, they experienced post-traumatic stress. A lot of the first responders experience it just from the recovery efforts of removing the casualties from the rubble.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, something that can affect anybody.
Right.
Post-traumatic stress can affect anybody.
Any being.
Yeah.
I read about some of the dogs that go in looking for bodies and things, and periodically they'll do a live person plant in a building in a bad situation so that the dog actually can find a live person.
Yeah.
So it impacts anything with a brain, human or not. You have the death. I have a friend whose dad just passed away, and bouncing off walls. And I said, about a week after, I said, just take it easy. I said, you have experienced PTSD in your own way, and it didn't involve bullets and bombs, but it...
Yeah, and not all forms of post-traumatic stress involve, you know, seeing dead bodies or being blown up or being shot at. There's a form of post-traumatic stress known as hypervigilance, and it's more related to those that were ready for stuff to happen, and it never did.
Oh.
Like myself, I was working at a theater internment facility, which most people would call a prison, in southern Iraq, and before my deployment, we trained for everything to go wrong every time, every day. And we spent the entire 15 months waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting, and nothing ever happened. So you never had that release of that tension.
Right.
And you come back to the States, and it never goes away. It's always there. I can't go to a crowded bar or a crowded restaurant and sit with my back towards the door. I have to be watching the door at all times.
Okay.
Because I have to be aware of everything going on at every moment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just how I am. Mm-hmm. I'm always looking around. If I can't see behind me, I look for something with a reflection.
Okay.
Like, I love this window. Right. I love that window because when I'm in the studio, I can see behind me. I don't have to look over my shoulder every time.
Right.
And they really mess with me sometimes. The facilities individuals, they put some stuff out here. They're little cardboard silhouettes from time to time. They put them outside of the window.
That's a special project.
And I will catch them out of the corner of my eye when I'd be in here working on stuff. And it would really mess with me. I'd have to turn around real quick.
I will admit, so not only do you have your own background, mm-hmm. But this was the second year, I think. The second year I remember that those figures were out there. The first year, it was exactly like that, and I don't have any of this other stuff going on. But, you know, you kind of turn to put in a CD, or you turn to see something or other, and you have a group of people out there in the hallway looking at you.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought, so I have to double-check and look and
exactly.
See what the heck's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's strange.
So, any stories, PTSD or not, that you'd like to share with the audience so far as your experiences?
Well, my experiences were very positive, especially for deployment-wise.
Okay.
A lot of people have had very negative, very, very negative experiences with deployment, and mine was very positive, very positive. What we did at the theater internment facility wasn't just imprison people. We didn't just detain people. We went through, and a large majority of the rural population of Iraq, especially, were not allowed to learn how to read. Were not allowed to learn how to write. Didn't know arithmetic. So their religion was told to them, and that's how the whole extremist front started, because individuals who were not allowed to read the Quran would be told what the Quran said. And it was, you know, for lack of better words, a bastardized version of the religion. There were some elements there, but not a whole lot. So what we did at the theater internment facility was we taught them how to read, we taught them how to write, we taught them arithmetic, we taught them a job skill. We taught them either construction or farming, or something to that facet, so that when they were released, they were a productive member of their culture and society. They were able to read the Quran. We had imams from the United States come over and work at the theater internment facility that would do religious education classes. We called it Islamic Development Program, IDP. And what it was being taught the religion word for word, what it said in the Quran, so that they were no longer in that extremist mindset that the Ba'ath Party had instilled upon them. Because for the large portion of the country, even the ones that were on the side of extremists, they weren't being extremists because they woke up one day, they're like, I don't like the Western world. It wasn't like that at all. They woke up and I'm going to go let Mike in. All right, I'll be right back.
Okay, well, I can do that.
Oh,
okay.
There he is. let me grab him. I'm surprised he's walking, actually.
Okay.
I'll be right back.
Okay. While that happens, and I have a little bit of music I'd like to share with you from Michelle Penn.
Never wanted to leave you alone. There was a reason I had to go. Please be strong as I walk on this lonely road. I need to know you're well. Now, so far away, I think about you every day. miss you so. I need to know you're well. Wherever I go, I still never lose hope.
That was Michelle Penn, and you have heard that on No Boys Allowed from time to time also. She wrote that because of the work she's doing with a lot of veterans, and a lot of the veterans she's dealing with are from World War II, actually. So there's veterans that go way back, and now Mike is here. Mike Emery is here. Welcome. And Mike is the founder of the Victory Gym, and he's going to tell us a lot about how that's working to help the veterans. We heard a fair amount from Mark Sheeler before about being in service and being on the war zone and coming back, going and coming back. And you've had, your life is really in factions. You had the bad boy thing going.
Yeah, and my prior service, I was doing a very terrible life choice, and I made a quick change. I had to, because my path was going a very dark route. So the military was the what I thought was the easy route of correcting those actions.
Okay.
And it was, in a sense, easier than just, you know, manning up and doing it the right way. But I decided to join the military, and nothing will straighten you out quicker than having 12 really angry drill sergeants with brown rounds, campaign hats in your face, screaming at you, and you can feel their breath on your eyelashes. Nothing will straighten you out quicker than that, especially when you have a 4'10" Cuban guy grab you by the top button of your uniform shirt and pull you down eye level with him and tell you that he will break your soul. And I didn't even know if that was possible, but I believed him. It's me.
Okay.
It's me. It's my.
Oh, okay.
It's my my battery pack here.
Okay.
It's dying.
All right, Mike. We have a little over 20 minutes, and
okay.
First of all, give us a quick synopsis of your military experiences and why you went, and then when you came back, what you did, what you felt, et cetera, et cetera. And then I want to spend as much time as possible talking about the gym.
Okay. Well, for me, I always wanted to join the military because, and I know it sounds funny, but because I saw the movie Rambo.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So at 12 years old, my grandfather, not Rambo 2, but the first one, which is First Blood. And I thought, wow, that guy's, I mean, of course he was going through all kinds of problems, but as a 12-year-old, I didn't see that.
Right.
As a 12-year-old, all I saw was this guy can eat things that can make a billy goat puke. He can do all this wonderful stuff. He was trained to be the best, you know. And I thought, that's what I want to be. I want to be that guy. Mm-hmm. So I always wanted to be a soldier. And then I joined the military and realized it's not quite like that.
It's not that fun.
There is no lone guy running around saving the world. It's actually better. Mm-hmm. And that's what I came to enjoy from it. I joined in late 1991. I wanted to join during the first Gulf War, but unfortunately, I didn't have a high school diploma.
And in the early 90s, like I was talking right. about earlier, the early 90s, the restrictions for joining were a lot more strict than when I joined. Mm-hmm. When I joined, they just wanted people.
Right.
They needed legs on the ground and have them moving in a somewhat forward direction. They didn't really care the quality of those legs as long as there were numbers, because I'm not sure who it was, but somebody said, you don't win a war with knowledge. You win a war with numbers.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
So they just wanted numbers, because we were falling behind in 2005, 2006. Their plan was not going as they had hoped. So you put more people there, and it'll work, because that's how the mentality was. You put more people there, more money, we're good. We'll do it. Because yeah. that's just the mentality behind it. Because we have these things called war colleges and stuff, but they really don't do as effective a job as you would think a war college would. Because mm-hmm. you think college, you think higher education. Something beneficial is going on right. there. And not necessarily. It's not always that case.
They seem to forget a lot of things.
Yeah, they seem to forget. Like you see a lot of officers that come out of West Point.
Okay.
U.S. Army's officer school.
Mm-hmm.
Officer candidate school. It's the college where you go to become an officer in the Army. And they get to their unit, and they're better than everybody. Except, you know, they're really not, because the people that they're in command of have been in the military 10, 15, sometimes 20 years.
Right.
And they're in charge of them, and they think that their mentality is that it's my way or the highway. You don't get a say in this.
Right.
And grunts, like the gentleman sitting to my left here, we put those guys in their place. We call them pointers for a reason, because when somebody graduates from West Point, they get to the unit and they go, look at that, look at that, and they're pointing it. And we don't call them West Pointers, or we don't call them pointers because they went to West Point. It's because they're always pointing at stuff. Ooh, it's new. They're like a little puppy. They're just
objects.
Yeah, shiny objects. Oh, look at that.
Okay, and
yeah, so I'm very opinionated on people that go to West Point. Okay,
I see that.
So when I in 1992 when I joined, I realized that of course it's not like Rambo.
Right.
It's a lot better. It's groups of people, teams of people working together to accomplish a task, as opposed to just one person. So later, yeah, I went to Germany. I joined the infantry. I wanted to do all kinds of cool things, and I went to Germany, and then I was stationed in Georgia, and I got out in 1999. I was married at the time. My wife, she didn't have a whole lot of respect for what we did, so, you know, I said, you know, I'll get out, do the civilian world for a little bit. But then the wars kicked off in 2001, so strangely, you stay in contact with all your friends from the military, sure. So they're calling me saying, hey, we're going to Afghanistan, we're going to Iraq, and all this other stuff. And so I said I had to join back up. And I stayed in. I had 3 deployments in the infantry. And then I retired in 2014. When I retired, it was a medical retirement due to issues with PTSD and stuff like that. I didn't realize I had this. It was something that came out and was diagnosed by someone else. And at first it upset me because I wanted to stay in. You know, I had about, 18 years at that time. So, you know, I wanted to stay in. I wanted to complete my 20 years. But then as I grew to understand PTSD, you know, I realized that it's not such a bad thing. We're like a computer. We were programmed a certain way. Mm-hmm. We just have to learn to live with it. And that's one of the things that I always say to people. when someone says so-and-so is suffering with PTSD, I go, wait a second. We don't suffer. We live with it. Mm-hmm. We live with it. We deal with it. Just like any, I have a broken leg. He has problems in his head. We live with this, you know.
Right. Wow. When you came back after the full time, the 18 years, how did you find this world? How did you find the U.S.? How did you find dealing with the U.S.?
Extremely difficult. Strangely, when you're over there and you're surrounded by your teammates, your squad mates, your platoon, and so on and so forth, you feel safe. But when you're back here, that this is the transition that a lot of us have issues with. It's where you feel safe. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what Victory Gym and Veterans Health Club does for people. It gives us a safe place, because what veterans will tend to do is they'll hide in a bottle, they'll hide in drugs, they'll do all kinds of other things so that they don't have to pay attention to the world that's going on around them.
Okay.
But in creating Victory Gym and Veterans Health Club, we have to give them a place to where they can break out of that shell and start to interact with people. For instance, we initially weren't going to allow civilians to be members there. The board then decided, wait a minute, we have to learn to deal with these people. We have to learn to trust them, and they have to learn to trust us. And I think that was an important thing.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I tell people all the time is Victory Gym is less a place to go lift weights and make loud noises than it is to go and sit down on a leather couch, watch some Fox News, drink a cup of coffee, and just talk smack to another veteran. Because that's one thing that people don't understand is when we talk about the military, everybody's like, oh, the military sounds great. No, the military is terrible. Being in the military sucks. However, I would much rather be tired and dirty and hungry and yelled at and have my brothers around me than to be in the civilian world where nobody yells at me. I'm never tired. I'm never hungry. And I'm always safe. I don't like it. I would much rather be miserable with my friends than be safe at home.
Okay.
The strange thing is that's what we talk about.
Yeah.
We never talk about, I would never look at Mark and say, hey, remember that time we had the best meal of our lives? We never say that. It's always about the most miserable time we had.
We talk about being stuck out in the field for 3 weeks, yeah, being poured on with rain and cold and hungry and tired and having no dry place to sleep.
Waking up with a foot of snow on top.
Yeah, like, we like that.
We love it.
And okay, it's kind of screwed up because people aren't supposed to like that kind of stuff. But we remember the people that we were there with, mm-hmm, at that time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I remember going to the field in Korea. I was in South Korea for a year. We went out to the field, and I decided I didn't want to sleep inside that metal box with those four stinky dudes, so I was going to sleep on top of the metal box in the freezing cold, because Korea is like on the same, you know, parallel as Michigan is.
Oh, okay.
Northern Michigan.
Yeah, it's cold.
So, you know, we're talking, you know, negative 30 degrees at night with a foot of snow. Okay, cool. I didn't think about that because I did not want to be in that metal box with those stinky individuals. So I went up on top with my sleeping bag and my poncho, and I set up my little sleeping area to where I couldn't roll off of the gun one way or the other, because that would an 11-foot drop to the ground, and the ground is frozen. You don't want to fall 11 feet to the frozen ground. So
you're artillery, right?
I was artillery. Yeah. I was on a self-propelled in Korea. So yeah. I went up there, and I woke up in the morning, couldn't sit up because there was that much snow on top of me. Well, this sucks. But that's, you know, that's the stuff that I talk about, and I laugh about it, because if I don't laugh, I'm going to get angry. And
right,
I already had anger issues to begin with, and if I don't laugh about things, it just gets so much worse.
You know, speaking to anger issues, if mm-hmm, you don't mind, they
please.
One of the debts, everybody has different issues when it comes to PTSD. Some, they do a lot of certain things, but anger seems to be one of the biggest.
It's the go-to.
It really is, and there's not a medical term for it, I don't think, but I call it like flash rage. And it's for no other reason than I have a tab on the back of my hat here that says stupid allergy. we're allergic to stupid stuff. And when things are so simple, but somebody complicates it and makes it so difficult, that tends to get us angry. And I was in inpatient care for a while, for a month last summer. I noticed that there was a spike in the problems that I was having. So I sent myself down to Kentucky to a military psychiatric facility to wrap my head around this thing. And I started to understand some issues when it comes to that. Like a normal people walking around the hallways, their normal day-to-day lives, they say, some people say, well, I go from 0 to 100, just like that. But folks with combat experience, we're never at zero. We're never even close to zero. We're typically around a 50 or a 60. Whereas your normal civilian walking around, going about their day-to-day lives, pumping gas, they're at about maybe a 10 or 20. Nothing's really going on. So that's why we tend to pop like that. And that's one of the things we have to learn to live with.
Yeah, I've had some issues with anger myself that I've had to deal with post-service, and I'm still dealing with post-service. But me personally, I don't go to the VA for any sort of treatment, whether it's psychiatric or physical health. I don't like the idea of the Veterans Administration and their healthcare system. I was supposed to get a hearing test because I was artillery, so naturally I have bad hearing.
What?
Yeah, exactly. We call them artillery ears because you're just around loud, booming, thunderous cannons all the time. You tend to lose a little bit of hearing. And I have tinnitus, and I have a ringing in my ear 24 hours a day. It'll never go away because I've damaged my ears that much. And I wore hearing protection. I wore earplugs, triple flange hearing plugs or earplugs, every time we shot. And it still affected me. And I tried to get a hearing test through the VA. Like, oh, okay, we got you an appointment. Great. I'm so glad you got me an appointment. And this was in like January. And they're like, it'll be March. Okay, I got you. You're backed up. I understand that. In Monroe. I live in Dearborn. I'm not driving to Monroe for a hearing appointment. That's just ridiculous. And at that point, I wrote off the VA. I withdrew from the healthcare system. And I never spoke to him again. And I'm glad I did, because had I continued going to the VA for all my health problems, they probably never would have diagnosed me with brain cancer, which I've gone through a year and a half of treatment and therapy, and I've had radiation and chemotherapy, and I'm currently attached to this wonderful clinical trial device that I've been wearing for the last year, because civilian healthcare system actually works. For the most part. Mm-hmm. I mean, Mike can attest to the other side of the civilian healthcare system, but, right. You know, he's had his bad experiences with the civilian side. I've had my bad experiences with the veteran side, and it's just how it is. Yeah. But that's what I like about Victory Gym, is if I don't know something, how I go about getting help for this certain issue, I go to Victory Gym. Okay. I talk to the people that are there. Okay. And everybody there has so many experiences that they're able to give you some sort of enlightenment. Okay. I've got my experiences that help members there. They have their experiences that help me. Whether it's a civilian matter or a veteran matter, somebody there knows what's going on. He walked out.
Okay. Speaking of the gym, we are down to just a few minutes. And Mike, if you could please tell me why. I mean, what gave you the idea for a gym that's a nonprofit organization?
It's pretty weird.
Yeah, it is.
I don't think anybody's ever thought of doing anything like that. I was in the hospital, like I said, last summer, learning to deal with issues that I had with PTSD. And I started thinking about it. What am I going to do when I get out of here? There's the VFW. There's the American Legion. And no disrespect to these organizations. They've been around for a long time. But life was different then. They didn't really understand what was going on. And furthermore, some soldiers or former soldiers or Marines that are part of those organizations, maybe they didn't volunteer for their service. Maybe they were drafted. Mm. They didn't even want to go. So it's a whole different world these days. And I thought there should be something else. If you go to a VFW, they do a lot of wonderful things. But what is that organization? You go in there.
It's a bar.
You drink a beer. You get a discounted beer. Wonderful. That's great. And you can eat some food that's probably horrible for your health. And then you go home. And those organizations all started back in the day when people didn't know how to deal with it. They came home from war. They
bought heroin at the pharmacy.
Where they worked 12 hours a day, seven days a week. And then they would stop at the VFW, have a couple of beers, and start all over again the next day. Mm-hmm. And I thought there should be something else, because those veterans did wonderful things that are unimaginable and superhuman. But this generation is a different generation. Oftentimes people would come up to me when I was a recruiter and they'd say, I hope you don't have to go over to Iraq or Afghanistan. And I'd look at them and say, you don't understand, I want to go. I would go tomorrow if they told me I had to go. It's a whole different thing. It's a whole different enemy. So that's where I came up with the idea. And as soon as I got out of the hospital, I hit the ground running in August. And then by December, we had the doors open. Wow. It's still a struggle every single day. I mean, sure. Just to keep the lights on and the doors open. That's all we care about.
Yeah, the funding just doesn't come in as much as the members try to raise money. Mm-hmm. Through different efforts, reaching out to companies or just trying to find donors in general. The money itself isn't rolling in. The equipment was all donated.
Everything. We have like probably $150,000 worth of equipment.
Wow.
All donated.
Yeah.
But that doesn't pay the bills.
Right.
Right.
It doesn't keep the doors open. It doesn't keep the lights on. It doesn't keep the cable on the TV there, because, like I said, what I go there for is to sit down, watch TV, and talk to people. I don't go there to lift weights because that's just, look at me. That's not who I am.
Talk to people that speak your language.
Yeah, I talk to people that understand. Yeah. And one thing that we did in the military is we liked to just poke at people, like each other. Your brothers that are in your platoon and your squad, all you did was mess with them. That's all you did. It's what you do in the military. You just make fun of people the whole time. So when I'm at the gym, there's a guy there. His name's Adam. He's one of the original volunteers.
Yeah.
And he's like Mike's second hand. And I go in there, and all I do is just make fun of him for being a Marine. And I have no problem with Marines, but I have problem with Adam being a Marine. So if that makes any sense. And that's, I mean, you know, that's just what the service does to you. You know, we all develop this friendly rivalry between the services.
Sure.
And everybody knows that no one likes the Coast Guard. So, I mean, that's just how it is. Mm-hmm. I don't even think we have any Coasties at the gym, but
okay.
I think there may be a couple.
Well, there you go.
There's a Korean War vet. He comes in there every day.
Okay.
Walks on the treadmill for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever, has a cup of coffee, and goes on about his business. Yeah,
it's whatever works for you, basically.
Yeah.
Sure.
It's a safe place is what it is.
Yeah, and exactly.
That's exactly what Victory Gym is. It's a safe place for veterans, military, first responders, National Guards, and reservists to come and be at peace to where you're not going to be messed with.
Get them out of the house.
Yeah, there's no reason for someone to have to come in and talk about Blue Lives Matter, because everybody at the gym knows that. Everybody knows that. We don't have to worry about those social issues coming up, because they're not an issue at the gym.
Right. Are you doing anything so far as like job placement or any type of counseling in that regard?
We do. One of the things that I tell folks is if McDonald's comes in there and they're looking to put things on the wall to hire people, I don't want them there. We want to give people careers.
Mm-hmm. A job is just over broke.
Yeah, so anybody can get a job at McDonald's. But when I reach out to folks, I talk to, there's a gentleman who works with the Illich family.
Mm-hmm.
He does security down there. Perfect. That's perfect for veterans.
And we love that.
They would like. Sure. They would enjoy something like that. And that's a good career for them. So it has to be a career-based type thing.
Mm-hmm.
That we look for.
I know we didn't have a lot of time. I'd like to have you come back again.
Sure.
Talk. And the gym opened in March?
December.
December, okay. Yeah. So you've not been at it a year, and I'd like to check up and see how it all worked out, because it's going to be wonderful.
And if anybody wants to donate either money or items, because you know, Mike was telling me that setting up a lending closet for veterans in need is a great idea, because, you know, if somebody finds themselves down in their luck and they need a refrigerator, we can lend them one.
Okay.
Yeah, can lend them a refrigerator.
Sure. Do you have a webpage?
We do. It's victorygymvhc.org.
Okay.
And they can go there and you can see what we're all about.
And is there an email on that?
There is.
Okay.
Yep.
So that's probably the best way to get a hold of you.
Absolutely.
Telephone number. I know you're on Telegraph and I know you're in Brownstown.
About a quarter mile south of West Road.
Oh, okay.
On the southbound side of Telegraph.
Okay.
Right across from Oak Ridge Cemetery.
Okay. I feel like we needed another 4 hours to get through a few things. So.
That would be nice.
Mike and Mark both, thank you so much for being here today with
Absolutely.
Impact.
And
thank you, listeners, for listening to Impact, the show about individuals and groups making a positive difference in the community. The views and opinions expressed on Impact are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio nor Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn. And we're going to leave you until I saw Daddy G out there someplace gathering up some ice cream. So he'll be on in one moment. And until that time, we'll listen to Welcome Me Home.
I never wanted to leave you alone. There was a reason I had to go. Please be strong as I walk on this lonely road. I need to know you're well. Wherever I go, I still never lose hope. Now, so far away, I think about you every day. I need to know you're well. Wherever I go,